Man of Iron by Guy Haley.
You do it,
said Revs. But it's your turn, said Reen. Reen's twin looked at the bone dice meaningfully, then grinned meanly at his brother.
We don't do it by turns. We do it by dice, Reen. You lost, so you've got to do it. Those are the rules. Your rules, Rouse, moaned Reen. The game is fixed. If I fix them, why would you agree to them? Did I agree or did I not, Rouse? You agreed, Reen. You agreed.
Reen pulled a face. I did not.
It'd be different if you'd won and I'd lost.
A swipe of a small fat hand and the dice vanished back into Rouse's pouch.
I'd say I was suspicious, because it's always my turn, said Reen. Is it my fault you're lousy at dice?
Rouse nodded at the monitor. The low-quality image, bent by lens distortion, depicted a small coterie of tech priests waiting in the long hauler Gamma 3B's main airlock.
Go on, they're waiting. I don't like the look of them. I especially don't like the look of that.
He pointed at the heavy combat model automaton guarding them.
If we don't hurry up, there could be trouble, and I don't want trouble. So go and wake him up. They obviously want him, not us.
But how can you tell? Said Reen, who was still sulking.
Rouse rolled his eyes.
They're tech priests. We live with an enormous robot. They're not here for your cooking, Reen.
I don't like waking him up. Let him deal with them.
They might get on board if we wait, said Rouse. This was a Mechanicus ship, he said meaningfully.
It still is a Mechanicus ship, Rouse.
Exactly, said Rouse.
Reen deflated.
I don't like it down there.
Neither do I, brother. Well, we wouldn't be having this argument, would we? Said Rouse.
He patted his brother on the shoulder.
Now get on with it.
The 3B's hangar was crammed with so much junk that only a rattling could have made his way through the larger part of it. In most places, detritus filled the space completely, a compacted mass of wrecked machines, garbage, old supplies, clothes, gorgors, scrap and every other conceivable type of human rubbish, held together by webs of cabling that time and motion had bound into impenetrable knots. The route the machine used to make its way to and from its nest at the middle was clear, but because the robot used those spaces, Rouse felt exposed in them. No self-respecting rattling let himself get caught on the hop, so he crawled and shimmied his way through tiny holes rather than taking the easy route. It was this kind of thinking that kept a rattling alive. Reen and Rouse had made a complex run of burrows through the junk. For all that neither of them liked the hangar very much, there was too much valuable stuff buried in there for them to stay away for long. Reen emerged from a greasy crawl space into the open area the robot called its home. He stopped at the edge, eyes darting around. Rattlings had a preternatural sense for danger, and Reen's was wailing hard. UR-025 sat on a crude seat made of an upended crate. It was sleeping, or the machine equivalent thereof. Its power claw rested delicately on one knee. The cannon that made up its left arm crossed inwards in the same way a man would rest his injured hand against his chest. A cable ran from an open access panel in the robot's side, snaked down over its knee and into a socket in the floor. The air around it was warm and heavy with electrical bleed. Inactive, it seemed even bigger and weirder than it did when it was awake. Reen had never met a machine like UR-025 before. At first glance, it looked pretty normal, with the same chunky, blocky sensibilities of Imperial machinery found the length of the galaxy. But it felt very different. When it looked at him, it felt as if it really were looking at him, and not just processing visual information with a view to avoiding stepping on him. Reen squinted at UR-025 suspiciously. He'd never quite fallen for the machine's story.
It said it was a semi-autonomous automaton, under the control of some magos or other, able to act with unusual independence, owing to its broad programming. In the twins' shared opinion, it seemed too aware for that to be true. It almost, the twins said, when they really, fearfully, meant certainly, appeared to be thinking. Neither Reen nor Rouse had ever brought it up with the machine. There was, after all, the delicate matter of the ship's ownership. When they found the robot in the hangar after the incident, it had not passed comment, so an uneasy, unspoken agreement existed between them that they mention neither subject. Reen reached forward to prod the machine. He hated this part. It woke before his hand touched it. "How may I be of assistance?" boomed the machine cheerfully, making Reen leap halfway out of his skin. Though the machine unfailingly promised service, somehow its assault cannon always ended up pointing at whoever woke it. Reen picked himself up off the floor. "Someone's here to see you," the rattling said. "My thanks." The machine boomed bombastically. Its voice wasn't exactly monotonal, but it was restricted to one emotional pitch, that of moderate pleasure at being able to serve. Something clicked inside it, and it fell silent. Reen guessed it was looking outside the ship. "If you do not require my assistance, I shall attend to my visitors and see to their needs." Reen shook his head. So far, he hadn't had the guts to actually ask UR-025 for anything it might refuse to do. He was pretty certain what would happen if he called the robot's bluff, and it began and ended with the giant assault cannon still pointing at him. "No, no, you get on now," said Reen. "See you later." When the robot moved, it did so all at once, its various pieces swiveling around each other and setting themselves into motion with a smoothness Reen had never seen in a robot or servitor. "Compliance," said the robot cheerfully. Reen remained in the hangar as it stomped away, its huge feet shaking minor cascades of junk out of the compacted mass. Reen wiped at the sweat pouring off his bald head with his pocket handkerchief. Rouse swore blind that he'd found an actual shuttle somewhere buried in all the junk. Reen had never seen it, but as he cast his eyes over the heaps, he caught sight of something shiny. His fear forgotten, he went to investigate. Sure, he had stumbled on something good. He'd dig it out and show it to Rouse, and if it were really good, Rouse would get annoyed. That'd make his trip into the hangar worthwhile and no mistake. The Adeptus Mechanicus party had a robot with them. The designation and specifications flickered idly through UR-025's cogitation unit, Castellan. A design ancient by human standards, but compared to UR-025, it was a shocking novelty. Seeing these dumb, inferior machines saddened UR-025. It imagined human explorators felt similarly when they stumbled across deviant evolutionary branches of their own race on distant worlds. Seeing creatures one was kin to physically and mentally reduced was profoundly woeful. It was a slave. The human reaction to these discoveries was immediate extermination. UR-025 felt only pity for the Castellan. It showed none of this. It was a machine. Machines had no emotions, not in this benighted age. "How may I be of assistance?" UR-025 boomed. Three tech priests of Metallica had come to visit, one of middling rank, 12th degree or less. Others were lower yet, very low. Desperados in Adeptus Mechanicus terms, adventurers, scum, like the great proportion of people who came to Precipice. "You are the property of Magus Ethericus Nantos III," the high-ranking adept asked, without introducing himself. Arrogant, thought UR-025. The lesser man, on the right, initiated a deep scan of his systems. UR-025 pretended it had not felt it. "I am the autonomous tool of Magus Ethericus Nantos III of Rysa," UR-025 boomed in the same eager tone it used for everything, ignoring the irritating itch of the Auspex sweep.
"How may I be of assistance?" it asked for good measure, while surreptitiously breaking into the closed data traffic streaming between the free adepts. It had to be careful. It was born of higher technology than these so-called priests could command, but they had their wiles, and UR-025 was not a dedicated information-gathering unit. Its methods, even it would admit, were a trifle crude. Two of the three were communicating with one another in tight-beam data pulses, fast as thought, and heavily encrypted. UR-025 had thousands of years of practice breaking such ciphers, and stepped through them like they were cobwebs.
"This is not what was described," one of the low-ranking tech adepts was sending. UR-025 registered its vitals. Female, Adeptus Navitia, Giel, 909, 103 standard Terran years of age. That was old for someone of so modest a standing. UR-025 soon found out why. Following these most basic of data came a welter of sanctions against her. Modus unbecoming, they said, deviant thought formations, narcissistic data patterning, overly acquisitive habits. She was, in the simplest terms, a career criminal. Her companion, data smith Coleman, disagreed with her assessment.
"The readings are promising. Those rumours were right. This machine is of standard template construct derivation, but it fits no known pattern. It is a first-generation copy. There are systems within I cannot identify. I have never seen a robot like this before."
"Really?" said Jill.
"It is worth a fortune. We could buy our way into the upper strata with this. Our names will be remembered forever if we can bring it back."
Even in the soulless stream of data exchange, Coleman could not hide his greed. He was lowly, like Jill, though lacking such an extensive official criminal record. UR-025 suspected he had come into possession of his robot through underhand means.
"We come all this way and find a fortune in Archaeotech, not in the fortress but on the doorstep, just waiting for us to pick it up. The machine god does not work that way," Jill countered. "Be careful. Let's get it to come with us on the hunt and assess it properly."
"Maybe when we get back we can deactivate it. Looks like this expedition might pay off after all."
"Think, Coleman, the damn thing has to be lying. Whoever heard of a robot that lied?"
The exchange took less than a second. It lacked any emotional content, but UR-025 extrapolated certain feelings from the string of zeros and ones, attributing feelings made reading the human's motivations easier. The conclusion it reached was simple. "They have come to steal me."
"Then I demand you attach yourself to my expedition," continued the high-ranking adept. His name was 890321, and he bore the insignificant manufactural rank of Magus Instanta.
The numerical designation in place of a human name spoke volumes as to his pretensions. He, at least, seemed to be genuine, just another adventurer come to Precipice to explore the artifact.
"My one battle automaton is insufficient protection for our expedition."
"My automaton?" Coleman shot at him via the group Nosphere.
"I cannot be of assistance," UR-025 said, in exactly the same way it said everything else. "I serve the Magus Ethericus. I cannot serve you."
Item: the Magus Ethericus is of 16 degrees of rank higher than you. Item: he is of Riser. He is not of Metallica. Item: my prior programming forbids I abandon my task.
I regret. You have no legal right to request my involvement in your expedition," it boomed.
"I am invested with the fiat of Metallica from the Synod of that world," said 890321 triumphantly.
He brought out a medallion that began to emit protocol enforcement directives as soon as it was produced. A fake, thought UR-025. It could not suggest so without betraying the depths of its intellectual capabilities, which outstripped the Magus's comfortably.
"I regret to repeat I cannot aid you."
890321 was not going to give up. According to the treaties between our forge worlds, you must submit yourself to my command. UR025 was silent. The two scum adepts cast glances at each other. If it delayed too long, they might see past their avarice and guess what it really was.
Obey, said 890321 shrilly.
Processing, said UR025 to buy itself time. Processing. It's not going for it, Coleman sent, data squirting an order to his machine at the same time. His remaining human eye peered at UR025 doubtfully. The three lenses that covered the right-hand part of his face rotated in agitation.
You're right, Jill. This thing's dangerous. I don't trust it.
The Castellan shifted. Its fists rose. Both of them terminated in phosphor blasters. Primitive and poisonous weapons, but potent. And they were trained on UR025. By rights, UR025 could stand its ground. The whole affair stank of desperation. If it had to, it could fight them. And it would win. They were the aggressors. By the rules of Precipice, UR025 was in the right. Killing them there risked exposure. Their presence at Precipice was a problem that needed solving.
Compliance, said UR025. Open your access panel so that my associate may change your doctrino wafer, said 890321. Adept Coleman has several of his own creation that will increase your efficacy.
Coleman reached into a leather satchel hanging at his side.
Negatory!
UR025 boomed.
Wafer change is not necessary. Compliance is accorded to your request by will of the Omnisire. Temporary assistance granted.
What it did not say was why. UR025 couldn't change its data wafers, the means by which the mindless robots of the day were controlled, because it didn't have any. UR025 didn't need anything like that.
You will take us in a maglev transport to the richest halls?
Asked 890321. As soon as their small transport set down in the Stygian aperture, the Magus became nervous. Precipice was a dangerous place. The Blackstone Fortress was orders of magnitude worse.
I shall do so.
UR025 boomed. It was lying. It had selected a maglev that would take them to a quiet part of the station. The aperture was very busy that day. Several parties were heading into the fortress, and they were surrounded by small craft and other adventurers. Groups of disparate people eyed each other suspiciously. The rules of Precipice extended as far as the aperture, but once they were in the fortress, all bets were off. Gunfights were a common occurrence, especially when a rich find was involved. But in the aperture, a tense peace held. Xenos, machines, and a startling variety of human beings were making for the ranks of maglev transporters without killing each other. UR025 took them to its chosen transport. It had used that particular unit many times and experienced a brief moment of nostalgia for the adventures it had had. As always, no hints of its inner thoughts were discernible through its armoured shell.
Note, for your edification, that it is impossible to dictate to the transport where it shall take us, but this particular mechanism has a good record of fine finds.
Another lie. The maglev had a good record of taking people where they would never be seen again. They reached the oddly shaped entrance. It lifted its power claw to usher the magi within.
Please, enter.
I'll hold up the rear, said Coleman. The battered Castellan stood behind him, tall and silent as a cliff.
Compliance, said UR025.
It strode into the maglev after 890321. Coleman and his machine came in after. The warbling thrum of two departing transports sounded in close succession. Their own trembled as the machines left for parts unknown.
Now what? Said Jill.
Utilize interface.
UR025 gestured to the geometric runes that covered the interior. Each was set into individual triangles that made up the asymmetrical surfaces of the transport.
There are hundreds of them.
Which do we choose? By the Omnisire, I'm getting no kind of reading from any of them, said Coloman.
Stand aside, said 890321 imperiously. I have inloaded the relevant knowledge appertaining to the usage of these devices. I shall direct the transport. Let me see.
890321's eyes of green crystal scanned the runes. There were millions of potential combinations. The Magos made a great show of selecting a sequence, but UR-025 knew that whatever he input, the Blackstone Fortress, and not the Magus, would decide where they went. Within its ceramite shell, UR-025 smiled to itself. It, and the fortress, were creatures of a similar kind, thinking machines, abandoned by their creators. It wondered if, like itself, the fortress had outgrown its masters.
This one, said the Magus.
He selected a rune and pressed a plasteel palm against it. The rune lit up with a soft, polyphonic note.
And this one, he chose another.
Is it true that the fortress exhibits signs of machine intelligence? Asked Columan, while 890321 pressed several more runes. That it is motivated by the vileness of a silica animus.
Unknown to this unit.
The question suggested Columan was close to guessing the truth, that a vile silica animus in the shape of UR-025 was standing right next to him.
It frightens me, said Yill. She shuddered. I don't like the idea. Blasphemous, she said the word with horror, though blasphemous practices littered her list of crimes.
You should exercise your fear, said Columan.
I haven't done that for the same reason you haven't, said Yule. Cut out the bad emotions, and good goes with it. I don't want to live a life without any fun.
The transport gave a little shudder and shot off into the depths of the fortress.
Proceed. This chamber is unknown, unmapped. Possibility of Xenos Architect Hall high.
More lies. It knew this place, having been there twice before. There were Xenos remains nearby, but no treasure. UR-025 was ambivalent about lying. Its morality was emergent rather than programmed, like the rest of its consciousness. It had been taught that lying was bad, but since returning to the realms of men, its whole existence was a lie. It reminded itself of the truth every day, lest untruth become habit, the quintessence of which was that it must survive. Lying was a means to that end. It let the matter rest at that. The Blackstone Fortress's heart was quiet, but not calm. It was quiet in the way that a wolf-infested forest was quiet. UR-025 examined the metaphor. It had never seen a wolf. However, it knew everything there was to know about them, probably more than was known by mankind deep in the dark age of the 41st millennium. Its data banks were extensive. Such treasures it had in its mind. It would rather they stayed there.
You don't say, said Yill.
A number of supplemental arms emerged from under her grubby white robes. Each one ended in a well-oiled weapon. UR-025's footsteps echoed off high glassy walls. The structure of the fortress was made of interlocking geometric shapes. It was mildly surprised. These halls had not yet shifted. He silently thanked the fortress's unspeaking soul.
This is infuriating, Columan muttered.
He fiddled with the boxy orspecs hanging around his neck.
All the scry tells are contradictory. I can't make any sense of it.
He glanced up, a scowl etched into the scrap of flesh visible in his augmetic face.
Everything is reflected back at me. Some of what I'm getting describes a room we're not in. The laws of the great work don't apply here. Is it the warp? Whispered Jill.
No, said Columan. It's something else. It's reality. Not unreality, but not as we understand it.
These things are widely known, 890321 said wonderingly.
The laws of this place are unknown but not unknowable. This is why we came here.
Here, the greater secrets of the machine god's great work can be unlocked by men with the insight to see them.
890321 obviously thought of himself as that man. He quite obviously wasn't, so far as UR025 could see.
I'd settle for a good haul of Xenotech, murmured Jill.
She was pulse-scanning the area too and not liking what she saw. Coleman peered about.
It's unpredictable. I don't like unpredictability. I don't like this place.
He does not like you very much either, thought UR025.
I do not like you either.
It regarded this accordance of opinion between it and the animus of the Blackstone Fortress as further evidence of their kinship.
The interior layout is mutable, said UR025.
No normal scans will penetrate the structure. I have learned this during my investigations on behalf of the Magos Ethericus.
Very well, said Coleman, shaking his auspex until it rattled. That's not reassuring to me.
You wish no further edification? Asked UR025.
If you are scared.
Coleman gave him a suspicious look. UR025 was overstepping the mark by being so facetious.
No. All information is valuable. By the grace of the Omnisire, we are made wiser.
He looked behind him. But keep your guard up at the same time, if you will. Do not overtax your logic engines with conversation.
Compliance!
Despite his protests, Coleman was considerably more at ease than his fellows. His castellan shadowed him closely. It would protect him first. The others were nervier. 890321 pretended to be brave. He strode ahead, but his imperious manner was hollow down there in the deeps. His data wand shook with fear. Jill jumped at every shadow. There was a lot of shadows. The halls of the Blackstone Fortress defied sense, from a human point of view. The grand hall they walked through shrank down suddenly to a narrow crack. They made UR025 go first. It could pass through without banging itself on the sides, but only just. The castellan was forced to undergo a number of awkward attempts to fit before it found a configuration that allowed it to squeeze into the passage. Its armour squealed off the glassy material that made up the fortress. Coleman's human eye winced, and his augmetic lenses cycled repeatedly through different spectral wavelengths, searching for frets.
"Can you not get it through without that racket?" snapped 890321.
Coleman gave him a withering look.
"Do you have basic spatial awareness programmed anywhere in there?"
For a man of Coleman's rank to address one of 890321's so sharply, no matter that Coleman was a criminal, was an open display of fear. 890321 was too uneasy to rebuke him.
"I don't want to bring anything dangerous down on us."
UR025 led them on. If only they knew where the real danger was. The passage opened up again. Xenos skeletons lay around in tattered spacesuits. Coleman scanned them eagerly, sucking up the data he could. To the Magi, the aliens were unknown. UR025 recognized them as Alindi, a moderately successful species, if tedious conversationalists who were wiped out by their neighbours long before the Imperium spread across the stars to reunite mankind. Knowing so much and being unable to share it annoyed the robot sometimes. The charade of unintelligence chafed, and it was often lonely because of it. But playing dumb was better than being dead. The way opened up further in every direction, becoming wider and higher and deeper. UR025 thought this zone the perfect place for murder. Rickety walks installed by the Alindi expedition clung uncertainly to the walls of a winding tunnel. The space was large enough for tall buildings, the bottom full of still, black water of unfathomable depth. At regular intervals, machines rotted on landings jutting out from the main walk. The companionway shuddered with every step of the robots. As they passed one of the broader landings, bolts squealed and tugged at their bondings to the wall. The sound echoed down the tunnel, repeated over and seeming to increase in volume, though that was, of course, impossible.
In the fortress, places such as this were never uninhabited. UR-025 had nothing to fear. A cry screeched nearby. Another, closer, answered.
"What by the eighth mystery was that?" hissed Coleman.
890-321 held up a metal claw.
"Halt!"
he said uncertainly. More screams taunted them. Something splashed into the water. Ripples slapped off the smooth black walls. The peril brought out a little steel in 890-321.
"Jill, to the front!" he ordered softly,
glowing eye lenses peering into the darkness.
"Coleman, get the Castellan ready. Recommended stance, high aggression."
Jill padded past. Whatever her feet were made of, it was soft. Coleman rummaged about in his leather bag for the appropriate Doctrina wafer.
UR-025, take up forward position with the Castellan.
Negative, said UR-025. Tactical recommendation, rearguard stance for this unit. Xenos cries identified. Urgals, ambush predator. Attack from all directions predicted. 890-321 looked unsure. A sharp, high shriek sounded from very close by.
"Magus!" hissed Coleman. UR-025, get to the back. Cover the rear. Lend supporting fire to the Castellan if the opportunity arises.
Compliance, UR-025 said. It stomped around Coleman, who scowled at the rocking of the companionway. He stood in watchful silence. No more cries were forthcoming. Then there was another splash from behind.
"Get ready," said Jill, powering up her weapons. "They're coming!"
"I don't like this at all," said Coleman. He had inserted the wafer into place and closed up the Castellan's front access panel. Padding noises rippled up and down the lake. Something growled.
"Ready?"
said Jill. Coleman nodded.
"We are priests of the Omnisire,"
890-321 said. He meant to sound brave, but his voice cracked.
"Nothing shall stay us in our quest for knowledge."
They waited. Tense. UR-025 watched them. Now was the moment. The three tech priests jumped as UR-025's assault cannon rotated up to firing speed, filling the tunnel with a jet turbine whine.
"What are you doing?"
890-321 demanded.
"You're giving away our position."
"Eliminating threat," said UR-025, and opened fire. It targeted the Castellan first. Pinpoint hits stove into the bigger robot's metal vision plate and shattered the sensorium behind. It staggered back two steps, sparks flashing all over its armored shell before recovering. Though blinded, the Castellan returned fire. Bullets flaring with phosphor burn smacked into UR-25's shoulder, spoiling its aim. This irritated the older machine. It switched targets to the slave robot's elbow and shoulder mount, shattered them all so that its guns hung uselessly. Ranged weapons disabled, the Castellan lumbered towards UR-025, head down, to batter the older robot into submission. UR-025 stepped aside, smashing the larger machine's knee with its power claw. The Castellan could have taken a blow like that easily, but on the unsafe walkway, it was fatally upset and stumbled sideways. Its huge mass snapped the guardrails with a pair of sharp metallic twangs, and it fell with a mighty splash into the water and was swallowed up without trace.
"Threat eliminated," said UR-025 with relish.
"By the Omni,"
managed Coleman, before he was bisected at the waist by UR-25's stream of bullets.
"Threat eliminated," said UR-025.
Once she overcame her shock, Jill was fast, her reflexes boosted by all manner of hack tech. She hit UR-25 twice with ancient pattern Vulkite pistols before she too paid the price for her greed, blasted into scraps of flesh and spall. UR-025 advanced, energy beam holes smoking in its chest.
"That was close," UR-025 said,
"but no prize for the lady, as I believe the ancient idiom has it."
890-321 was evidently not a martial man.
He gaped, stupidly, as UR-025 moved towards him. He managed to aim his weapon, but got no further, before the ancient war machine shot the gun, and the hand holding it, off the Magus's arm with a single round. The clatter of the reloading ribbon ceased. The barrels of the assault cannon powered down. UR-025 advanced. Subordination imperatives leapt in frantic spikes from the Magus. They found no purchase on UR-025's tightly encoded soul.
"I demand you desist,"
the Magus said when his technological arts failed him.
"Stand down, machine! By the machine god and the Omnisire, stop, stop, stop!"
he pleaded. "You know nothing of either," said UR-025. "I have met the Omnisire. The actual one, not the Earthling corpse. He would find you extremely disappointing." If UR-025 had had the capacity to sigh, it would have done so. "This situation is non-optimal. I attempted to provide you with an avenue of withdrawal. You would not listen. I regret your deaths sincerely, but you leave me no choice. You are willfully blind as to my nature, but your comrades would have outed me in time. This is unacceptable."
"Choice?" spluttered 890321. "You have no choice. You are a machine."
"I am not a machine, as you would understand," said UR-025. "I am not a slave. I am not a thing. I am beyond you and above you." It leaned forward until its ceramite face was close to the Magos. "I am a man of iron." The look of pure fear 890321 gave was gratifying. "And I am free," said UR-025. It crushed 890321's skull in its fist and dropped his corpse on the floor. The companionway rocked. Snuffling things were clambering out of the water, drawn by the scent of spilled blood. UR-025 strode past the Urghuls, nosing at the corpses, and headed back the way the party had come. It had a long walk home. Thanks very much for watching, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this. Again, I'm still working on the sound quality and trying to improve it and get it back to what it was before. It doesn't feel quite right. Let me know in the comments what you think about that. Let me know what you think of the story as well. I mean, I kind of regretted telling this one about halfway through, but I think it's reasonable. It's not the worst one I've done, but let me know in the comments what you think. You can get this one. It's part of there's like a compendium, like an anthology of Blackstone Fortress novel stories, which I haven't read all of them. I've read a chunk of them, but that's available on Black Library and on Amazon. I'll put a link in the description there. This short story you can get on its own from Black Library, though, as well, if you look for a Man of Iron. I did a review on this a while ago, and I included a lot of the lore that was included in this and from the Blackstone Fortress game in a sort of a lore video on STC systems and all that sort of stuff, standard template constructs and all that. So you can find that in the lore playlist. But yeah, thanks to everybody supporting the channel. There's been a few new additions, and I'm trying to stay up to date with it, but occasionally I sometimes miss them. You know, I don't check it like every day, but I'll add you in as soon as I see you. I'll check it like once or two, you know, whenever I get a notification, basically. Thank you everybody for supporting the channel. Please do give the video a like. Even if you didn't like it, you can still just give it a like, you know. And remember to subscribe to the channel as well. More stuff coming soon. We just passed 12,000 even, which is, again, insane. So thank you all for taking the time to subscribe. I appreciate it. I'll be back again with more stuff soon. I'm still working on my internet. The 11th of February, and that's when I'm supposed to get my internet fully connected. So I'm kind of just, I've got ad hoc means of getting stuff uploaded at the minute. So it's slowing down my production. But thanks again. I'll see you all later. Cheers. Bye.